Welcome back to Transform, a podcast highlighting the people and ideas shaping the future of senior living. I'm Austin Montgomery for Senior Housing News. On today's episode, I spoke with the Springs Living founder and CEO, Fee Stubblefield. The McMinnville, Oregon-based senior living provider operates 15 senior living communities in the Pacific Northwest. The Springs Living is in the final year of construction on a state-of-the-art community in Vancouver, Washington, and more calculated growth is expected as opportunities present themselves heading into 2025. With margins improving and occupancy trending positively, the organization continues to deepen its operations to prepare for the next generation of senior living customer. Stubblefield recently published A Culture of Promise, a book profiling the company's creation, growth, success, and challenges to the present day. In the book, Stubblefield connects many themes present in the senior living industry, from creating a leadership-driven culture to building stronger relationships with capital providers.
Feelings matter, right? But we have to hit these hard numbers too. And so the balance of that and the formula of that is what the culture of promise is about and what we talk about and something that we've always focused on here.
Now, here's my interview with the Springs Living founder and CEO, Fee Stubblefield. Well, Fee, thanks so much for being back on Transform. Really great to have you again.
Thanks, Austin. Good to be here.
And I know 2024 has been a busy year for yourself personally, but also for the Springs Living. I think a great place to start would be just maybe talking about 2024 from an operations perspective. What's the year been like so far for you guys?
So let me start with a quote. Emerson has a quote out there that says, "The voyage of the best ship is a zigzag line of 100 tacks. See the line from a sufficient distance and it straightens itself into the average tendency," right? So that would be us. I think that tendency, the average tendency is up. I think we see a little bit of two-stepping going on in our portfolio. Communities that have all progressed occupancy-wise, we've seen it fluctuate, not really get all the way back to 95 yet, but certainly we're fluctuating in that 93+ 94 range, which is great. I think the best news is that we're seeing margins grow. And year over year, if I just pulled the numbers today for your show, year over year, we've seen our margins increase, which is great. That's what we want to see. It's what we have to see, right?
Yeah, I think it's only the nature of the progression and recovery. I think we've seen it's a lot of people this year, especially operators I'm speaking with about the recovery, have kind of said they've moved on, and it's more of 2024 as kind of being that level ground again, to be able to really start to make really focused efforts in certain parts of the portfolio to improve performance. And it sounds like you've been able to carry that the same with the Springs Living. Would love to know just where you've seen some of the biggest friction points, some of the biggest challenges in operations right now, given that you've had such strong improvement from where we were even 18 to 24 months ago.
It's the normal friction points that we're always going to have and we're never going to get away from, right? This is a business of problems. This is a business that people come to us because they have problems, right? That's why we exist. And so we will always have those problems. As long as our customers and their families have problems, as long as our employees have problems, there's long as markets, you know, and issues out there that affect capital, you know, whether it's, you know, rising treasuries and lack of liquidity in the system, all of those things are problems that we get to deal with. And you have to embrace that attitude to be successful here. Otherwise, you will run screaming from the building.
Definitely. And there's a specific building I want to talk about. I know for the Springs Living, there was a lot of excitement around the Springs at the Waterfront. I know we've covered that project, I think, seemingly from when the plans were initially announced to when the community first opened. Would love to discuss that community, and I believe that's in Vancouver, Washington, correct?
Right.
And you want to just discuss, since the opening, how that community really has helped evolve your opinion, what the future of senior living looks like? Because I know we've talked about the community in the past, but would love to just now that it's been open for some time now, I think is this the second year it's been open, but would love to just check in on how that community has really helped evolve your vision of what the future of senior living looks like.
Well, it's the second year of being under construction, going on the third, and we're right on schedule. We don't open until October 1st. But I can tell you that it's the second year that we've had operations in place and hired our executive director to, start the relationship process with the community. And that's going very well. We're not in the building yet. It's getting very close. Construction, it'll get turned over to us in August, and it'll take us a month or two to get everything ready to go for all the folks that are going to live there. And I would say this project is a good one to focus on, especially in the post-recovery period here, because it is a bellwether. And it's a bellwether, in my opinion, because it's a high-end community costing roughly $1 million per unit to build. But it's in a tertiary market. Right. So we've seen some very nice, expensive buildings happen in markets, you know, like New York City and San Francisco and, you know, Southern California and other places. But I don't know that we've seen a lot of communities like this. So the success of this building, I think, will be a good indication of our ability or the potential, the success of making share versus taking share. This is not a take share building. This is a make share building. People are going to live in this community. Probably would not consider, for the most part, moving in certainly at this stage of their life.
And with the Springs at the Waterfront, do you want to just talk about, from a technology and care perspective, how really this community and what's going into the construction of it, really, it seems like it's helping to prepare you for kind of the next generation of senior living and preparing for the high intensity operations that come with that. Would love to just get your perspective on what the inside the community itself with the Springs at the Waterfront, how are you really looking to elevate that technology integration and care as well? Because I think these are two key elements that when I'm talking with operators about new development, even though that's few and far between, those seem to be two common themes that come up of just being trying to be ready for what's next.
Well, this building is inherently different just because it was built for the next generation. But I feel like we've done that every generation. The first community we opened, even back when we opened the doors, started in 96, opened in 98, was built for a next generation. And even though it seems like today there's so much we've learned and so many things we could have done better knowing what we know now, this community is the same way, and it's built for the next generation. It's got the space, it's got the environment that will attract people, that will add to quality of life. It's got the staff space and resources to do that. It's got the infrastructure to be able to support the technology and the advancements that are happening. We have to have technology. With the declining ratio of caregivers to residents, with the cost, there's no option but to invest in technology and invest in places that, you know, that people want to be, right? We'll always have the have to be there, which, you know, obviously I talk about in the book Culture of Promise.
Right.
But this community represents our next iteration of want to be. But I feel like every community that we've built has been that way. So from that perspective, there's nothing new here. Yeah. Is the building different? Is it a mid-rise? Yes. Most expensive, yes, but inherently every year that goes by and costs go up, the next building is always going to be more expensive. So, but it's got all those same things, and the core consistency, whether it's our first building or our last building, is how we treat people and how people feel in the building, right? The environment of the space, the physical space, is only a small part of that. And I think that we've done really, really, really well, but we'll find out.
Yeah, I think we'll be watching along. It was my mistake there on thinking the community had just opened. So, but I really appreciate the insight, and I know we'll be tracking that along once the community opens. In terms of this, just a follow up for the Springs at the Waterfront. Is there you having some good traction in terms of lease up in a tertiary market in a unique in a unique market with a unique community. Would love to know just how things are going. Do you feeling pretty confident going into what we'll call the third year and probably the closest to being open? I mean, would love to know just where the momentum is on the ground, because it sounds like you've been able to generate a lot of interest in the community as well.
Well, at this point, this is kind of the exciting part. I mean, exciting can be good. It can be nerve-wracking, but we're getting ready to open the doors. We've spent all the money, and we'll see if people come, right? Will this be a field of dreams or not? I guess the way to look at it is I'm not worried, because I worry every minute of the day about this building and all of our other buildings, right? So the lease-up so far is right on track. Which is really good, because this is a urban building built in a suburban market. So there's a uniqueness there. The people that are going to live in this community are typically not coming from another urban environment, right? And so there's going to be, we anticipated this, there's going to be a whole group of people that are going to have to see it, right? And look in. Now, I can tell you this, everything that's facing the river, right, is gone.
Right? Yeah, I bet. Basically, yeah.
Right? And, but the other views, nobody can get in yet, right? Even with the 3D technology and the ability to do fly-throughs and, you know, photographs of the view, you really can't appreciate this building until you actually walk and look at the other views that aren't just, you know, facing the river. Almost every unit has some access to river, but the views to the north and to the east and the west are truly spectacular. This building is in the heart of the action. It's where I want to be. It's trains, planes, and automobiles. And it's like an Alaska. It's like going on an Alaska cruise every day you wake up there. I mean, last time I was there, I watched two eagles soaring from the 12th floor right out the window while sea lions that had come up the Columbia River from the Pacific were feasting on the smelt that it was running up the river. So it's a dynamic, irreplaceable location, and we're excited to see the acceptance of it. But it'll really come down to the real estate will get people there initially, but again, the quality and the success of this building will come down to the people that work there,
right?
And the people that that will live there because of those people that work there.
Well, that's, I think, one of the things that we'll be watching. And we know that given the track record, we seem to realize that you've been able to weather some pretty intense challenges and come out the other side. And that's exactly what I want to transition to here, Fee. I would love to now for the remainder of our conversation, discuss A Culture of Promise, which is your new book, which I know is something that we've spoken about before, but always great to dive back in. I know that I think the best place to start would be discussing the types of promises that you bring up that are central to the book. You discuss an aspirational promise to care for residents and a business promise to fulfill capital obligations, and you get into the nuance of those. So I think discussing kind of these types of promises, I think understanding why you really settled on those and how you got to that process, would love to really know when you were thinking down, sitting down to write this book, what were some of the things that drove you to really get to that concept of those two types of promises?
Well, I promised to tell you about the promises after I do a commercial break, which, just to remind you, which I did last time too, that we're really excited because all the proceeds from this go to supporting our workforce development program, which we call Springs Ahead. And we're pleased that so far it's already reached multiple number one categories on Amazon. I even got the sticker, which we haven't done anything with yet. It's reached a number one status in a lot of categories, but it's eclipsed. It's reached over into other categories, book categories like organizational change and entrepreneurism, which we're really excited about. And it's hit number one new release in a bunch of the normal business, very, very competitive categories. And so one of the core concepts that you ask about was these promises, these two type of promises that exist in these communities that we've introduced here and said, listen, we've got to understand our promises to all of our stakeholders. And there's really two categories. It's an aspirational promise, which an aspirational promise is, it's about feelings, judgment. It's judgment based. It's because we're taking care of our parents, our grandparents, and other people's parents. And that's so important. And an aspirational promise is almost, will most certainly always fall short. It just does. I mean, we're in the business of problems, right? People will fall even in this new community that we're building with this great staffing ratio and a great budget, you know? But the other side of it, though, we also have to balance is our business promise. Our business promises, those to all of our stakeholders, right? Our residents, our staff, our investors, capital side of it. And that's really more concrete promises that have to be relied upon, right? And achieved, right? Especially if we want to keep the organization growing, because if we don't fulfill our business promises to our capital, we're not going to get to grow the organization. But at the same time, it's a teeter-totter balance, because we got to make people, feelings matter, right? But we have to hit these hard numbers too. And so the balance of that and the formula of that is what the culture of promise is about and what we talk about, and something that we've always focused on here, trying to do. And I can tell you, it is too a zigzag, and you will never get it right.
I think one of the things in initially reading the book, I was caught off guard in a good way, I think, discussing how candid you were in discussing some of the failures and the inherent failures that are kind of tied into senior living, and recognizing that, like you said, people will have medical incidents, they will age, they will die. But you really make good points in terms of discussing just the different ways to go about creating an organization that can stand the test of time. So definitely know that it's something you put a lot of thought into. And I want to get your perspective here now in just thinking how operators can really live up to these promises. Are there ways that, one, operators might be failing their capital partners, and then capital partners might be failing their operating partners? I would really like to just discuss kind of some of the ways that you view the roadmap ahead for creating some of this organizational change. How can operators really live up to some of these promises that you mentioned?
Well, first of all, it's about really understanding what business we're in, making sure operators are really operators, right? And not financial people, and making sure that capital understand the culture of the operations and know how to best support it. Operators have to take a long run approach, and capital has to support that. You can get a P&L to work in a given year or a given quarter or in a lot of ways, but to do it year over year after year and see the EBITDA grow and to see your quality grow is important. I think operators also have to be careful who they take money from. That the people they're taking money from understand what business they're in or prepared to support it. We've talked in the past, this is more like operating and financing agriculture, you know, an apple orchard, than it is operating a widget factory, right? You just don't stamp out relationships, you grow those. And to grow those, you got to do all those really hard things, but simple things. They take hard work, like farming, right? You got to weed. You got to weed the garden. You got to know when to plant the seeds. You got to know, I mean, all those things. You can draw a metaphor after me. I'm not going to go through that because everybody's smart enough to figure all that out. But it's more like that. And so unless you have capital that understands that, and I think on the other side, you asked about what capital can do. The capital can understand who the operators are and what culture that they're investing in, and make sure that they're investing in the right operators. I mean, that really understand and really understand. One of the chapters in Culture for Promise is the quality growth curve. I will be digging into quality growth curve because it's just a cursory introduction to the concept, but we'll be digging into that deep in the next book coming out. And this to me is one of the key things that we can do, is really understand we can't grow the physical number of buildings or units or whatever, apartments, whatever you want to call them, unless you're growing your quality at or greater than the physical capacity, right? And that seems really no, like no duh, simple, but it's not. And it takes discipline and thought, because construction guys, development guys, capital guys can finance and build these buildings way quicker than we can produce quality results in these buildings. I mean, it's like planting an orchard. You know, if it goes bad, you're just not going to fix it in 12 months. You know, you got to tear it out and redo the trees, figure out what's gone wrong in the soil, in the environment. Did it, you know, what happened? It's just not, there's no quick fixes here. So you got to do it right from the start. You have to do it right from the start. And if you don't, good luck to you.
Right.
You got a problem, you know?
And I think one of the big things to talk about here in just the relationships between operators and their capital partners, it sounds like from your perspective, you want to advocate for the really creating more nuanced relationships between these two sides of the house, right? Of bringing more understanding and kind of information to one another to really help build a better, more fruitful relationship. Is that fair to say? It seems like that's kind of what you're building towards or thinking about.
But these are simple things. And these have been talked about forever and ever, like Stephen Covey talked about these. Everybody talks about these. You know, Simon Sinek talks about these things. Maybe we're restating them a little bit differently and in the context of our profession, and we're using some authentic story to illustrate these points in the book. But it's the win-win concept. I mean, shouldn't it be that way? I mean, every business is like that, but we're not every business. That's the contradiction here, right? The principles that work in every other business work here too, but they don't work in the same way that they work in every other business. It's the nuances. And again, and this is another comment, I think it's chapter 10, about understanding our organizational culture. Capital's culture is different than operator's culture, and understanding how those two work together. Operators are judgment-based. Control is a mirage. If you think that you can puppeteer every interaction between all the human beings, take all the employees, all the residents, all their families, all the vendors, do the math on that. The permutations and combinations are unlimited. And to think that you can create a manual or write something that is going to anticipate every second to get things to fit in a little box and stamp out a relationship, you should go in a different business. It's not going to happen. And so you have to then rely on people, because we're in a people business. We're judgment-based business. We make promises to take care of people. I'm pretty sure taking care of you would be different than taking care of Joe Biden.
Right.
So yeah, there's a lot to that. I think the way that capital and operators, which I think is to the next question you wanted to get to, could really help with this is we have to demystify this. At this point, it shouldn't be a question, but it is. And so the way we're going to do that is with understanding, right? Clarity, you know, clarity. And I think that a culture of promise creates an opportunity for clarity to see our business with almost 30 years of stories and history and experience of what goes into it. But it's not just about senior living business, it applies to every business. But also we got to continue down this push towards transparency, research, data. We got to be vulnerable around that, because we have to understand what works and what doesn't. You know, an assisted, we shouldn't be categorizing everything just as an assisted living building or an independent living building. We should really look into the nuances of the quality that's there. You know, we're talking about the how will occupancy go, right? Occupancy is going to be fine. The trend tendency is up, right? For everybody, because the demographics are behind it. But what we should really be asking ourselves is what's at the end of a full building? Is it going to be filled with people that have to live there or want to live there? Is it going to be, what's our quality? How do we measure quality? These are big questions that are out there right now. How do we get, you know, what's our net promoter score? Are we vulnerable enough to put our net promoter score out there? And how about our net employee promoter score, net promoter score for employees? Those are the things that are going to really indicate things. And we have to be transparent about that. If we're going to access the capital to create more certainty in the quality of results that the market needs us to do, and we have to do that as an industry. That's why in the book, I am very transparent. I wrote the book for our company because I'm pretty sure that I don't know how long a CEO should be CEO longer than their mortgage. their house mortgage. But at some point, I won't be the CEO. And so I wrote this book for that. And I'm writing the next book, right? Forever Company, for that same reason, but it's more detailed. And so creating that clarity is what we're trying to do. But we've got to get other, we got to, operators, we have to work together in realizing this transparency is good for all of us. And we can't be afraid of our vulnerabilities, whether we have a building that isn't working or whether we screwed up, because we all have done it.
And I think one of the key points that you also bring up is the importance of the culture that's created and the ways that leadership can help build a culture of I'm thinking here specifically from an operations perspective on creating an operational essentially, it seems like you really laid out pretty plainly a lot of the operational things that work well for your organization over the years in terms of building a good culture, retaining staff, making sure that leaders are supported. Like, you offer a lot of very concrete things related to operations. So when you're thinking about a culture of promise from an operator's perspective, what areas do you think that they maybe are missing on if they're struggling with some of these staffing issues that maybe just won't go away? Would love to just get your perspective on maybe from an operator's perspective, how they could view a culture of promise.
Well, and I'll remind you, we've got every problem everybody else does, right? So we've got the whole range, right? It's guaranteed to happen. The key is, I think, Austin, what we're talking about is time on the clock. You get down in a basketball game, the game's not over as long as you have time on the clock. The time on the clock I'm talking about is, you know, what does your ability to impact that environment, meaning do you own the building, right? Do you have a really long-term lease that allows you to make the decisions to get the quality outcomes? I think for the Springs, I would say our number one biggest reason, because we've got no secrets. In fact, so many of my peers that I talk to, we hope to be as good as they are in so many categories. I think the one thing that you could probably attribute the success that we've had to is that we've been able to own and control with our partners and replace partners to keep all of our buildings. We've managed every building that we did 28 years ago. And when you had time on the clock, you can recover. If I go back and showed you our EBITDA on like the first community that we opened, at one point you would go, oh my God, fire these guys. They don't know what they're doing. And guess what? We didn't. Right. And so you got to play the long game here. You have to play the long game, and you can't control the uncontrollable. You have to ride the wave. You can't control the wave. It's going to happen. You know, and I think we're seeing that out in the broader industry. Look at Walmart, the announcement this week that they're pulling out of the healthcare industry, right? I mean, unlimited funds, unlimited ability. Why? I think the answers are found in concepts in a culture of promise. It's that they didn't potentially know what industry they were getting in, and their why. If their why was just to monetize their store locations and make more money, then they're trying to kind of stamp things out there. Now, Walmart has I've recently been to Bentonville and spent time with people down there because I'm fascinated by what they've built there. And I don't know if you've been there, but they have really built a forever company there, and they've done a lot of really cool, amazing things. But certain business units have certain mandates, and they're clearly a different culture than we are. We look at things different. So there's a lot of good conversation that has to happen. And this conversation isn't just for senior housing, right? It's healthcare too. That shows you how very much like healthcare. It wasn't that long ago. Gosh, when was it? The late 90s that Hyatt and Marriott made a big play into senior living and then ran screaming from the building, right? Kind of like Walmart's running from healthcare right now. Are those two things similar? My guess is, well, I can't give you the answer completely right now. I'm just guessing. I think there's something to look into there.
Definitely. And I think in how candidly you write about operations and some of these inherent failures within the senior living space, I think you also touch on some of the ways of promoting and helping build up strong team members and a culture of leadership can help really create the environment that residents want to live in and that capital providers want to grow with. Would love to get your take on this, because I think you bring a wealth of experience to your position. What is the industry getting wrong when it comes to senior living staffing? Are there things at the basic frontline operations level that you think the industry needs to improve on? I know obviously some of these issues are even exemplified within your organization itself, but what are some of the things that from a high level, when you're thinking about the industry and senior living staffing, where is the industry kind of getting wrong? Do you think there's some things that need to change? Would love to get your perspective on staffing.
I think we're going in a very good direction. I think I see a lot of things out there, whether it's on LinkedIn or other stories and the stuff you guys are reporting on, that shows that people are paying attention. They're paying attention to their employees. Because really, what we really need to have is a perspective that there are true customers. We actually don't take care of older adults. We take care of our people, our team members. They take care of them. They know what to do. We hire the right type, give them the tools they need, the resources they need, and time on the clock. They take care of people. And so, you know, while there are lots of individual things that can be done and that we're doing, you know, I would answer that question in one way with the fact that the book's proceeds go to supporting our entry-level workforce and helping them build towards 11 resources that we all need in our lives to live a successful life or live a life the way we choose to, right? And so that's one way right there is, you know, understanding that. But the more we realize that our industry really probably could be classified as a staffing residency. And that's why, you know, I'm going to take a shot here at staffing agencies. All my friends out there, sorry about this, but that's our job. But I mean, that's our job. Otherwise, what are we? Real estate? There's a question. Maybe correlate those results. That's our job. Why in the world would we outsource our staffing to other people to pay them a margin? I can't, for the life of me, understand that. Now, I get short-term problems, and we've all used agency from here to here for a short period of time, usually as a backup for a failure of lack of planning. And thank God those are out there. But that's what it should be for. It should be the exception, the rare exception that you see agency on your P&L, not the standard. And so, you know, all this stuff could be boiled down to some really simple things on the P&L statement, on your worker comp rate, your mod rate, you know, your what you're paying agency. So I'm probably going to get in trouble here, but that's just how I see it.
And I think one of the other points that you make in the book is really interesting. And you talk about embracing change as a cornerstone of being essential to improving operations. Do you want to just talk about that for a little bit? And then I've got one other question for you, and then we'll get you out of here.
Well, that's a quick one. Embracing change is essential to living life. So it's like breathing. I mean, it just is. I mean, it's the only thing that doesn't change, all right? It's the only thing that is completely consistent, is that you must pivot. You know, you must embrace change. You must, you know, we got to look at things slightly different. And for all of those of us out there, which many of us are there, that don't like change and don't want change and makes us nervous, I think we can create environments where we can get psychological safety around that by just knowing it happens. And that's the thing we come to expect. So I think we can get, you know, everybody from people that are chaotic, like maybe more like me, not chaotic, but just throwing a lot of things in the air and trying to move a bunch of things at the same time versus people we rely on. We would be nothing without the consistency of our core staff that make things happen. And so being able to communicate and understand that all life is change, and that's, we need to look at it that way, and we can put it in a box that we can have psychological safety. It's an important concept.
Most definitely. And Fee, last question here. You've often told me how the Springs Living is not seeking growth, simply just to grow. Would love to know, when you're looking ahead to the next 12 to 18 months, what can we expect from the Springs Living? What are your priorities? Where are you looking at?
Our priority is to continue to refine our ability to grow quality. And as we do that, we will have opportunities to grow not only for new developments, which we are working on multiple ones I can't tell you about right now, and to acquire, right? So both of those, there seems to be a lot of money out there buying stuff up left and right, and we're just not going to make an acquisition if we don't think we can be successful. We're going to play the long game. We're going to wait. And so until we find the right opportunities and they come together, we're going to work on growing our foundation and our quality, and for the next generation of those of us that want to be a part of this very noble and honorable profession.
Well, Fee, thank you so much for joining us on Transform. We really enjoyed our conversation with you today. So thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, Austin.
That does it for this episode of Transform. I'm Austin Montgomery for Senior Housing News. Thanks for listening.